he roams the halls of Congress that once were sacred, and he sees corruption, self-interest, greed, and lack of ethics. She'll say sometimes that I'm surrounded by light or that I'm very busy or whatever. She said that we all have guides on the other side. My guides are that she's hearing something about me, that they're saying that I'm a metaphysical historian.
Welcome to the New Age Human Podcast. I'm your host, John Astacio. Our guest is Suzanne Munson, who is an author and historian who has broke new ground in her concept of metaphysical history. From traditional biographies of American founding fathers to connecting with the afterlife, Suzanne's work is a real eye-popper, eye-opener. So stick around for the whole episode because we do mention her transition from a traditional historian to a metaphysical historian, communicating with the late Thomas Jefferson's thoughts on today's world, including confirming conspiracy theories, real-life Ghostbusters, just going to leave it at that, and at the very end, overall advice on what to do with this information. Now, before we begin, if you like the show, share with a friend, hit that like, subscribe button on YouTube, and if you want to join the conversation, you can always go to Telegram, and if you want to communicate with me, you got some questions, you can either do in the community on Telegram, or just shoot me an email. Just go to newagehuman.com. Without further ado, let's get to the show and get crazy. Cool. So I think it's really cool to have you on the show. So thank you for being on the show, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm excited to talk about your story and your experience as going from a traditional historian to a metaphysical historian. And I'm not used to hearing metaphysical and historian together. So it's interesting. Like, this is like something that I haven't dove into, and I'm excited to talk about it. So where to begin, right? Can we talk about first why you went from a traditional historian to a metaphysical historian so that the audience can understand like that leap?
Sure. Actually, I'm still both.
Okay, cool.
Still write traditional history, and I still complete metaphysical history. So I try to have a distinction between those two. Well, it all started with the death of my husband about 10 years ago, and also leaving the working world. I finally decided I could do that and stay home and write. And so I was just, the day I handed in my resignation, I said, I can finally write this book that I've been dying to write. And it was a biography of a founding father, Thomas Jefferson's mentor, George Wythe. And it's titled Jefferson's Godfather. So anyway, I went to work on that as soon as I retired. But then around that time, my husband died. And that began my metaphysical path. And I wanted to know where he went. I would go outdoors and I would say, you know, or look at the stars and I'd say, where are you? I'm not hearing anything. All I was getting was like crickets, you know?
And
literally. So, yeah, literally. And so I've always been curious about spiritual matters. I don't like to use the word spiritual because it has a heavy religious connotation. And I tried to stay away from religion in my metaphysical studies.
Okay.
Although the great truths are embedded in the great religions, that I did find that out. But about love and the divine energy that rules the universe, all that. But so I wasn't hearing anything from my husband. So I went to a writing retreat up in the country. And those who had published books were encouraged to put their books out for others to see. And so I saw this book, and it was called Friends in High Places. And it was written by a ghostbuster and a medium, who's also a poet, who had published a number of books. She's very well regarded. And so I was really lonely then. It was only 6 months after my husband died. And so I said, Katie, you're a medium. She said, no, I'm an amateur medium. I don't get paid for it. And I said, Could you channel my husband? And she said, yeah, probably. What's his name? So I just gave her his name. I didn't give her any details. She went in her room came back about a half hour later and described him perfectly. You know, she had never met him. She'd never heard me talk about him. So I came home and told my children about it. And of course, they thought I was nuts. And, you know, they were incredulous. They were not going to believe. So then some time went on, and I belonged to this organization called the Institute of Noetic Sciences, founded by astronaut Edgar Mitchell, to bridge science and spirituality. And so we had an author speak to us who had written a book about seven readings that she had gotten through a medium of readings with her late mother and late friends and others. And so she wrote this book with publishing the readings, and it was it won some national awards. It was very well regarded. And I thought, well, if this medium is so good, maybe I should call her. So it was odd. It was an odd thing for me to do. She lives in Indiana. I live in Virginia. And I had to get my courage up to make an appointment because it was, you know, still in the weird category. And the way we handle our sessions is that you can buy a half hour of her time or an hour, and I always go for an hour. She starts the recording right on the dot. She calls right on the dot, starts the recording when we're ready, and then we have an hour. And then the first person I asked her to access was my late husband. And he came through really, really well with things that she could never have known about our family and our background. So that went on for a while. I didn't overdo it. I would like go maybe twice a year. I'd have a session.
Could I pause real quick? When he came through, he wasn't talking through her. It was more of like a dialogue with her, with him. How did that happen?
I never hear the person on the other side.
Okay.
I ask questions, and the person on the other side hears them in real time. And then, you know, immediately she's translating what she's getting telepathically.
Hmm.
And okay. I've talked to enough people on the other side that I know she gets their rhythms, their little peculiarities, and their speech patterns.
Got it. And did that help you with closure, with how everything happened and like connecting with him in that way?
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
My children still don't accept it. Even though he's been giving them lots of signs, he gives light shows to my daughter and really freaks her out. But
how does that work, a light show?
Well, see, all this is new to me, but I have learned that spirits can manipulate electricity to some extent. They can flicker lights and so on. And he's been giving her lots of light shows, but it just freaks her out. She just, you know, can't accept it.
And everybody's like, no, it's just poor electricity.
Right.
Like, everybody's having electricity problems.
Yeah.
Like, it's not. What about the other kids? What type of messages has, can you give an example? I'm very curious about the messages he gives them. Or, like, does he move stuff? Is it something beyond a flickering light?
Oh, it's just with my daughter. I don't think he does. I think with my son, our son, if he sees that our son is very stressed out about life and business, he says that he tries to like whisper in his ear, you know, try to help him as best he can from where he is. But he doesn't put on any shows for him, just for our daughter.
No shows.
No shows.
So your daughter's the only one that pretty much feels like something's going on and has that connection. Is she the youngest?
Yes.
Okay. How old is she, if you don't mind
She's
me asking?
She's in her mid-30s.
Mid-30s, okay, cool. And so I did hear that, you know, when you're younger, you're more susceptible, and then as you get older, it just kind of wears off as far as that belief or the openness to it. So
that's true.
It's pretty interesting how she's like, she's in her mid-30s, which is still young, and she's the youngest, and she's the only one, like, enjoying this show, right?
Right. Well, I think he's really put on a show for her. And I think she thinks there's something to it. She went in his closet. I still kept a lot of his clothes. And her husband needed a tie, and they went in his closet. And she said, oh, this was Dad's favorite tie. Why don't you wear that? And then the lights started flickering. And they never flicker. Those lights never flicker.
Really? So, that's pretty cool. Yeah. You just mention him and he's like, yeah. Yeah. I'm in your conversation. I'm in your life.
Oh, he's around. Spirits are around. You know, if they like their family, you know, they want to be near their family. They're around. Yeah.
So when in your writings retreat, I definitely want to go back and highlight Ghostbuster. I don't hear that term too often. If outside of the movie, did you meet them? Did you get any clarity on what they do as Ghostbusters? I mean, they bust ghosts.
Right.
I guess they trap them or something. Can you? Did you learn anything about that? Or
it's a very generous, kind thing that they do. A lot of people, you know, pretty sane people feel that they have seen ghosts or felt ghosts. I never have. I've never had that experience. I don't really have any personal paranormal experiences. You know, I just go through the medium to do what I need to do. But personally, I have no gifts, although I've been told that I can train myself to do some medium work. But I'd rather work through somebody else than not go to all that trouble. But so the Ghostbusters, at least my friend and her group, they were in Lexington, Virginia. She's deceased now, but they would go to places that, well, like battlefields. They went to a battlefield one time, and there was, according to them, I'm just repeating what was told me. There was a young Confederate soldier who had died there. And somehow he was not able to leave this plane that we live in. We're in a densely physical plane, and then there are various other planes of different higher energy as you go on. And so he was in kind of he was stuck in the next plane, but he wasn't getting where he needed to go, and that's in the higher planes where spirits are supposed to go. And so he still thought that he was in the Civil War and that somebody was coming over the hill at any minute to either rescue him or kill him. And so they released him. They said, you're dead. You need to go on.
By the way.
Yeah. So what they do is you know, ghosts are, from what I hear, I don't know anything about myself, but they're stuck here. And they need to be released. They need to go on where they're supposed to go, to the better place.
And that's a repeating conversation and thought pattern and belief and understanding that, right? Especially the traumatic deaths, you're stickier to this plane, right? Or to a lower level.
I think so.
And then as you are more heightened, I should say, elevated as a person during your waking life, when you do pass, you have access to the higher realms, and I think you are more choosing to help or explore.
Absolutely.
Right?
Well, and through this group, the IONS group, Institute of Noetic Sciences, I've met a lot of interesting people. And one of them, I'm not going to call him a Ghostbuster, or I don't know what to call him, but he and other people are actually facilitating releasing some of the people from Auschwitz and those horrible places where a lot of spirits are captured. They need to go on.
And it's interesting because, I mean, that type of work, it must be really rough to be aware of the why, that person, that soul is still there. And there must be a huge want and need and a pull to help the spirits. You can be a veterinarian and just play with animals. You know, there's a lot of things you could do. So it's interesting how people find their niche.
Exactly.
And just go for it passionately. Meanwhile, other people are freaked out about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you were continuing on with your communication with the mediums and communicating with your late husband. I remember before we had a conversation prior to this, you mentioned that you were able to get in contact with some famous people.
Right.
Can you highlight on that? Okay.
Well, here was my thought. This is during COVID.
Okay.
And I had the medium gives me a reading about where I am. Somehow she can do that. I don't know. I don't understand all that. And so
Wait. What do you mean? It's a remote interview or a remote conversation, and she gives you information about where you are physically, like what's next to you, if you have tea or coffee,
where
what's behind
I am,
you?
In my energy level. Like, she'll say sometimes that I'm surrounded by light or that I'm very busy or whatever. Anyway, she said that we all have guides on the other side. That's one thing I've learned, that my guides are, that she's hearing something about me, that they're saying that I'm a metaphysical historian. Well, I'd never heard that term either, you know, but I wrote it down because I take very, very good notes from my readings, although I get a recording, but with my family, I never want to go back and listen to an hour's worth of recordings. So I always just really, really write as fast as I can. So I wrote that down. Anyway, but I didn't think much about it. And then my next session with her, it came back again. She said, you are being seen as a scribe. You're being seen as writing down very important things. I said, that's interesting. I wrote that down, didn't do anything about it. But then the thought occurred to me, well, maybe I don't know, maybe I should think about this. So I said, well, if I can connect with regular, normal people, why not somebody famous if I connect with ordinary people? And so I said, well, I've written this book about Thomas Jefferson. I know a lot about him, but I have a lot of questions about him. And so maybe I'll ask for Thomas Jefferson. So I got up my courage to do that. I did not give the medium any advance notice about who I wanted to contact. But apparently, again, what I've learned, I don't know any of this myself, is there's kind of like a green light on the other side when spirits know they're being thought about intensely. And so there's kind of a green light with Jefferson. And he said, and she didn't blink an eye. And she is not an historian. She majored in elementary education. She didn't know anything about Thomas Jefferson except that he was president and wrote the Declaration of Independence. And that's all she knew. So she said she had connected with him. So I asked very politely if he would like to participate in this project with me. And the words that came through were, well, your heart is in the right place. You're not doing it to make a lot of money or to be sensational. And yes, I think we can cooperate on this.
Nice.
And so I used to have this, I've always been fascinated by Thomas Jefferson. And I honestly had this fantasy for years and years and years that I could dig him up from his resting place. Of course, I'd have to clean him up and everything. But and put him in my car and drive him around the University of Virginia that he founded. I mean, this sounds nuts, but
what a visual.
Yeah. Well, let's forget that part. But, you know, like his spirit would be in the car with me.
Right.
And that I'd drive him around the university that he founded. And I'd say, look at all the women here. Isn't that surprising? And look at these people of color and these people from Taiwan and whatever. And look how huge this is. And look at all the new buildings. Anyway, I found out in my readings with Jefferson is that when they leave, they're not stuck in that time in history. They know what's going on here. And that's why my book, The Metaphysical Thomas Jefferson, is so important, because these are his insights about what's going on in Washington right now and in the institutions of higher education, religion. Very down on organized religion. He was during his lifetime, too. But, amazing insights. And then the other thing that I had to explain in the book is called The Metaphysical Thomas Jefferson. And it's a result of 8 recorded one-hour sessions with an entity who is presenting himself as Thomas Jefferson.
Presenting himself as Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
Thomerson?
Right.
Thomas Jefferson.
So,
well, okay, continue. Were you going to highlight what he thinks about what's going on today?
Yeah.
Okay.
But first, there are only 3 ways to look at that book. And I have this in the introduction. Number one is I wrote it. I have the recordings that clearly show, and I can send the recordings to anybody, that I'm the one asking the questions, not providing the answers. Number two is the medium made it all up. Well, she doesn't speak at all like the words that came through. She's a very nice lady, but she's not an historian.
You're like, she's not that smart. No, well, no, she's not educated in the history. She's educated in other things. So
that's
it's like, you know her background. So the cool thing is you laid out the groundwork where you're like, you know, she's not just pulling stuff from her knowledge.
Right.
And just, for lack of better words, BSing you. Right?
Exactly. And then the third option is that we are hearing from somebody who's presenting himself as Thomas Jefferson coming through the medium. So take your pick. I don't write like that. You know, my style of writing is very different. Had I written Jefferson's words, I would certainly not have used modern terminology. You know, I would have faked it like 18th century cadence. I know better than that. And so he used words like cash cow when we started talking about collegiate sports. I was asking him about University of Virginia, and he did speak about the school that he founded. How it was, there were still some people there who were adhering to his original principles, but that were getting away from that.
I'm actually, what's coming to my mind is I'm thinking about the audience listening and what they are curious about. And there's a lot of turmoil going on nowadays. I'm not sure when the last time you spoke to Thomas Jefferson, but was he talking about anything that's happening in society that's just causing a lot of drama that he doesn't like we're going away from the Constitution? How does he feel? Or, yeah, can you kind of go in that direction and his thoughts and his feedback?
The recordings took place in the first months of 2020 as we were under COVID. This was right after January 6th.
Okay.
His views were, I did ask him about Biden and Trump, but I'm not sharing that.
Oh, man.
No, I'm not sharing that. And because I didn't want anything in the book to be topical, you know, I wanted it to be universal truths and not geared to any particular time in history. And
So Thomas has an opinion on Biden versus Trump. He literally has an opinion, though.
He's aware of them. Yeah, he's watching everything that's going on.
People say, oh, what's going on right now? Like people like Thomas Jefferson would be rolling in their graves. Well, he's not rolling. He's roaming around and just judging and now having a conversation with you, which is great.
Well,
we got to get into some type of like what he thinks about what's going on, even though it may be a little politically dividing, but I have faith in the audience that they are thinking with open minds and open to just a potential being that claims he's Thomas Jefferson saying something and just digesting it out of interest, whether it be entertainment or potential fact. So yeah. you have the doorway.
Okay.
Just to let you know.
Well, I'm a student of government. My first book, Jefferson's Godfather, was really all about good government, about the man who got America off to the right start, George Wythe, by teaching 200 of our first leaders not just to be public servants, but to be ethical public servants. So ethical conduct in government is very, very important to me. I follow politics very carefully. So the first questions, oh, by the way, well, I had a bunch of questions for Thomas Jefferson, and I have it's a number of different chapters, different subjects. But what I did was I went on Amazon, and I found living authors who were Jefferson scholars who'd published books about Jefferson. And I emailed them. Most of them are attached to universities, so you could get their university addresses. Mm. And I said, I presented it as a class project. I said, I have taught about the Jefferson legacy at the Chautauqua Institute and at at the university level. So I sort of presented myself as a serious person. I didn't say what I was really doing. And so I said, if for a class project, future class project, here's the premise. If you could talk to Thomas Jefferson, what questions would you ask? So about eight of these scholars provided questions, not knowing, you know, what I was going to do with them. And so I added my own questions to theirs, and they had some really good ones, too, that I wouldn't have thought of.
Smart move.
And so the first chapter is about government, because that's what I feel very strongly about, that we need to preserve the government that our founding fathers wanted us to have and that is in danger now. And so his words were, he roams the halls of Congress that once were sacred, and he sees corruption, self-interest, greed, and lack of ethics. Of course, we all know that. He's not saying anything we don't know. And then we have other chapters on religion and higher education and use of the military. He was very specific about we've been abusing our military.
How do you think did you ask him how he thinks we handled the lockdowns?
We didn't get into that, no.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, as far as like roaming the halls, I'm pretty sure he was like a fly on the wall and just watching everything and not telling you about what his thoughts are. And did he give any advice as far as people, whether it be from education to mindset to hold, you know, like hold the fort, anything that you can give us that he said?
Yes. He was so negative about government and practically everything else that I asked, because a lot of our institutions are not exactly failing, but they're not living up to their potential. Higher education certainly has its problems. And the University of Virginia, and he wasn't just picking on the University of Virginia, but all of higher education, they've gotten away from a lot of their original founding principles to educate leaders. And so, I asked him about collegiate sports, and he said cash cows, and, you know, that was student athletics are not today as they were intended during
his
day.
So he's saying, like, so to paraphrase or to summarize what you're saying, he doesn't like where our school system has gone, because instead of breeding or creating leaders, you're creating good workers.
Exactly.
Is that me?
Yes, okay, precisely. Okay. No, he did say that. So finally, I said, after all this negativity, I said, well, what would you do? can't you say something positive? And so I said, what would you do if you were president right now, or president of the University of Virginia? I posed both of those questions. And he said that there would be very little that he could do now as president if he came in just plopped down in the office, that he would need a following because you can't lead without followers. And right now there were not enough followers to create the reforms that he would like.
Followers of him.
Followers of the mission that he would, for example, getting big money out of elections. That was major. And that's not going to happen without a new crop of people up there. So he was saying that he would start in Congress first, and he would try to organize what he calls circles of integrity. He would try to gather around him people who had not been corrupted. He said, so easy to become corrupted in Washington. And he's not just talking about recent years. It goes back, you know, back to the 1800s. Corruption in Washington, nothing new about that. And so he said that he would try to gather like-minded people with him who wanted to institute the reforms, get them through. And then gradually the circle would enlarge, he would hope, and you'd have a critical mass so that you could effect reforms. And only then could one of them rise to become president, but there would need to be a critical mass of followers. And right now that does not exist.
Interesting. Yeah. Even without naming names, there is a following that's growing that sees the need for mass reform in the government. So it's interesting how you said there's nothing like that going on now, maybe in the way that he would like to.
He looks at it differently. I think a lot of those people are for big money in government because big money sways their way, their philosophy. It buys ads. It buys influence. He wants politicians to start shaking hands again, you know, go around, see your constituents, have town halls. Now, I will have to say that we have a representative here who I think lives up to Jefferson's ideals, Abigail Spanberger. You'll hear more about her in the future. She's on her way up. But she is ethical, and she's a hard worker, and she's bipartisan. And if we have more people like her, you know, you could eventually have a critical mass of ethical public servants. But we have to vote really carefully. There's hidden agendas behind a lot of the people that we vote for. And they don't come out until they're in office. Ooh, all of a sudden, whoa, where did that come from? So
just as a second ask, are you still not open, or are you open to saying anything that Jefferson says or feels about Biden or Trump?
No. I really don't want to go there.
Okay. I figured I had to ask. I was like, you know what, maybe there is a chance. But
I can't even talk about it with my friends. I mean, it's just... It's so divisive.
Yeah. It's come up once or twice in past conversations. But there, I do like that there is a overwhelming agreement that there is need for change for the better, and that it's becoming more and more obvious. It's becoming more and more obvious how corrupt and just shadowy the decisions are, and in politics. And it's just now it's turned into a show. People are already, I feel like, at least from my perspective, people have known for a while, but it was just too stressful to even process. But now it's just in your face. You have no choice because it's turned into a show. And so it's interesting how Jefferson pretty much is saying the same thing, which is good to at least hear that a founding father is like, you're doing it wrong.
Right. Well, he does say he craves for this planet critical thinking. We're not thinking critically. We're swallowing the party line, certain TV channels that people only watch, you know, that it's the only source of their information. They won't go anyplace else because that the other people listen to that. And he's saying that, you know, we're just, people are swallowing stuff that they need to think more critically. And also, he is current with current events, as I mentioned, and he knows about the internet. And he said something interesting about that. He said, also, he was sort of getting into what I would consider conspiracy theories, but the people behind the scenes who are pulling the strings. Apparently, there are those individuals that are not known, but they're big money individuals who are actually pulling the strings on everything. And I found that a little hard to take, but I think we all know that's probably could be true. And so he said that the powers that be are trying to control the media. And of course, the death of the daily newspaper is something that we should all be very, very, very concerned about.
All right. That was part one of this two-part episode. Next week, we're going to go further into Thomas Jefferson's concern with the government, what to do with all this information that we spoke about, and a sneak peek into Suzanne's future plans as a metaphysical historian. So if you haven't already, you can go over to newagehuman.com. You can join the newsletter and get sneak peeks and a breakdown of each episode. And yes, you can go over to Telegram and join in on the conversation. And with that, I'll see you out on the next episode. Peace out.